Robin Hood Radio presents Agriculture from Tucana Farms. Here's Mark Scherzer.
Over the years, I've gone back and forth between pride and guilt about our raising of grazing animals. The reasons for the pride are obvious. Our British white cattle, when we had them, and our Caracol sheep, which are ever with us, are beautiful animals to behold as they graze the pastures. Their very act of grazing kept the landscape groomed and lovely to behold as well. And their symbiotic relationship with the land, nourished by eating the vegetation and in turn enriching the pasture with their peripatetic droppings, has always seemed spiritually right. We loved and love them for their quiet, peaceable spirit, the personal bonds we developed with some of them, and the pleasure we have taken in eating the tasty meat of those destined for the table. The guilt that has lurked in the background stemmed in part from our frequent reading of environmental literature, which has suggested that grazing animals, particularly ruminants like cows and sheep, play a significant role in increasing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. According to a recent article in the Sierra Club Bulletin, which relies on information from the pre-Scott Pruitt EPA, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and the University of California Davis College of Agriculture and Environmental Science, agriculture produces over 9% of U.S. greenhouse emissions. Almost half of that 9% is attributable to livestock raising, which accounts for more greenhouse gases than the entire aviation sector. And over one quarter of the agricultural greenhouse gases come from beef cattle alone. One major reason agriculture contributes so significantly to greenhouse gases is the methane produced by the, quote, enteric fermentation, unquote, that takes place in the digestive systems of ruminants like cattle and sheep, emitting gas in burps and farts as well as poop. For every kilogram of food they ingest, cows produce four times as much greenhouse gas as chickens do eating the same quantity of food. And sheep are even further out on the continuum, producing nearly six times as much per volume of food eaten. Methane, moreover, traps 25 to 30 times more heat than the equivalent quantity of carbon dioxide, the most common greenhouse gas. Big agribusiness practices such as growing row crops like corn to feed the cattle, tillage that disturbs the soil, feeding cattle in concentrated grassless feedlots, and, especially, feeding cattle with corn and other grain, which increases bovine methane production through upsetting their digestive systems, are all practices which contribute to the agricultural sector's greenhouse gas. But it has been reliably estimated that even if the best rotational grazing and no-till agricultural practices were adopted, and if cattle were purely grass-fed rather than grain-finished, it would shave only a few marginal points off their gas production. The fundamental fact we must face is that the fermentation that goes on in the ruminants' multi-chambered stomachs is a veritable gas machine. In contrast to cattle, by the way, I've seen an estimate that all human beings on Earth collectively release about 73 metric tons of methane and 1,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere every day by farting, a trivial amount, equal to the greenhouse gases emitted by the jet engines required to fly a couple of thousand people from Los Angeles to New York. Having been concerned for years whether we were being environmentally irresponsible by raising these animals, I've always been on the lookout for the environmental advantages to ruminants. To be sure, there's plenty of material out there about how agriculture in general can be used as a tool to combat global warming through practices known as carbon farming that pull greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere and restore them to the earth where they're sequestered. The main vehicle for doing this, as described in the Sierra Club article, is cultivation of better, deep-rooted grasses that can operate as year-round carbon sponges because they do not lose their leaves in winter, and by creating better topsoil, achieved through adopting no-till or low-till methods, boosting soil organic matter with additions of compost, and better managing crop rotation, especially through the use of cover crops. Indeed, our local New York State Assembly member, Dee Dee Barrett, has proposed legislation to give credits to farmers to engage in carbon farming. But the major controversial question which remains has been whether animal grazing could be part of responsible carbon farming. About 5 years ago, Alan Savory, a Zimbabwean rancher who had relocated to the U.S., gave a TED Talk, nonprofit organization dedicated to disseminating new ideas in technology, entertainment, and design, that is TED, in which he proposed that grass-fed livestock could contribute positively to carbon sequestration through what he called holistic management in grazing. He claimed that intensive short-term rotational grazing, in which a dense population of grazers ate down a small area and then moved on quickly, could loosen rather than compact the soil, making it more water and carbon absorbent. These practices, he argued, would lead to grazing down of undesirable pasture plants and encourage the growth of deep-rooted grasses that would contribute most to carbon absorption. Savory's pronouncements caused a sensation among some livestock farmers and gave Peter and me great encouragement. But as I wrote in one of my past bulletins, he was heavily criticized for making assertions about results that could not be replicated by others. His assertions seemed at best a promising theory that remained to be proved. And according to last month's Sierra Club bulletin, Savory's assertions that one could increase overall soil health through intense rotational grazing not only remain largely unproved, but in some respects have been affirmatively disproved. Does this mean, however, that we should abolish our grazing herds and eat only animals that don't burp, fart, and poop massive quantities of gas into the atmosphere? I'm pleased to say we're not there yet. In fact, this week's New York Times Magazine, in an article by Moises Velasquez-Manoff entitled, "Can Dirt Save the Earth?" threw us ruminant raisers a lifeline. The article summarized a developing body of research which shows that animal grazing can indeed contribute to carbon sequestration, but in an indirect way. The change doesn't come from the grazing itself. That indeed does seem on balance to release methane to the environment and does not contribute to carbon absorption by the soil. Rather, the change comes from using the manure these ruminants produce as a basic ingredient in what we should regard as a miraculous cooked product, the compost, which can work carbon sequestration wonders. Compost's value as a means of sequestering carbon began to be appreciated when scientists studying varying rangelands and agricultural land in California noticed that the soils richest in carbon tended to be on old dairy farms, where the pastures had been, as a regular agricultural practice, annually treated with top dressings of compost. The carbon content of the soil on these dairy farms and its depth of penetration seemed quite remarkable to the scientists and altered their understanding of how carbon-rich soils develop. As the article states, conventional wisdom holds that it takes perhaps hundreds of years for carbon-rich topsoil to accumulate. On these dairy farms, however, atmospheric carbon had been pushed deep into the earth in a matter of decades. The mechanism by which this carbon sequestration happens, scientists have found, appears to lie in chemical reaction that takes place in the formation of compost. Manure on its own, dropped directly by grazing animals onto the pasture, releases its methane and nitrous oxide into the atmosphere. But when the manure is composted with organic matter in the compost pile, the greenhouse gases become locked up in complex molecules which prevent the escape of those gases. A UC Berkeley ecologist, Wendy Silver, working with organic farmers, studied a 3-acre plot on which a half inch of compost was spread just one time. She found that the treated land began to absorb carbon right away and continued to absorb carbon at the rate of 1.5 tons per acre per year for several years after the treatment, while the untreated control plots under rotational grazing continued to lose carbon to the atmosphere. And based on chemical analysis, her team determined that the carbon was not drawn directly from the compost itself. Rather, the grasses, nourished by the compost, were enabled through that nourishment to become dramatically more effective at sucking carbon out of the air and transferring it through their root systems deep into the soil, nourishing the fungi and the microorganisms that make the deep soil ecosystem rich. The nourishing of the subsoil ecosystem was accompanied by increases in the soil's water absorption capacity and increases in the quantity and quality of the vegetation that grew there. Since agricultural lands cover one-third of the earth, some advocates have suggested widespread treatment of rangelands with top dressing of compost, envisioning it as some sort of panacea leading to a carbon-neutral economy. More cautious scientists have urged against drawing overly ambitious conclusions from these findings. They're not even sure if the effects of using this much compost would entirely wipe out the methane attributable to the farts of the herds of ruminants, whose waste would be a chief ingredient in the compost. While I want to resist getting unduly enthusiastic about these findings, I'm now thinking about our mountain of compost behind our barn in an entirely different way. This little mountain was built up the waste the animals deposited in the chicken coops, the barn, and other places the animals congregate, not from what they leave out on the pasture, but it's still a pretty significant quantity. I have, up until reading these articles, viewed it as a nutrient bank from which we could take freely to top dress our and your vegetable and perennial gardens, berry bushes, and fruit and nut trees. I now see that the vast majority of our compost left at the end of the season should almost certainly be used as a top dressing on our pastures, which would improve the quality of our soil and the grasses that grow there, thus better nourishing our flocks, and, importantly, sequestering tons of carbon in the soil, our little contribution to saving the planet.
Peter Davies and his partner Mark Scherzer are proprietors of Tricana Farms, specializing in heritage breeds of livestock on their 40-acre farm in Germantown, New York. Peter also presides over Tricana Odyssey, in which he customizes cultural tours of turkey for small groups, which he calls an insider's view of turkey. And his third hat is Tricana Gallery of Old and Antique Kilims, which he operates in the Wall Street area of Manhattan. Mark presides over his law firm, Mark Scherzer Law Office, which specializes in health law, also in the Wall Street area. Their farm website? TurkanaFarms.com. Their email, farm@TurkanaFarms.com, or 518-537-3815.